It almost seems like this case is from 2 to 3 years ago, or going back a little bit further, maybe 12 to 13 years ago. But the reality is, this case, Laughlin versus Wells, is from 40 years ago, and at its core is a dispute over royalties, which continues to be a key coin of the realm today. The full title is Thomas R. Laughlin, Dolores Taylor Laughlin, the National Student Film Corporation, Taylor Laughlin Distribution Company, and Avondale Productions Incorporated versus Frank Wells, Warner Brothers Incorporated, and the National Broadcasting Company Incorporated. It's from the United States District Court, Central District of California, from January of 1978, with a supplemental memorandum filed in February of that same year. A bit of background first. The Billy Jack films had a string of financial and critical success in the 1970s, and this particular case was triggered by that beast known as block booking. So a bit about that first. So what exactly is block booking? Well, this court, citing to the Mulvey versus Samuel Goldwyn's production case, explained block booking as that studio practice which enables a studio to obtain greater revenue from less desirable films by forcing an exhibitor who desires those other films to take the entire package. An exhibitor who refuses to accept the less desirable films will automatically be denied the films of greater worth. Put another way, block booking enhances the market value of those films of lesser intrinsic merit. And if a distributor refuses to accept the entire package, the revenue normally generated by the more desirable films will be substantially reduced. Because so much of my practice involves work in the entertainment industry, both in terms of contracts and also litigation, I do find this case fascinating, and I think you will too. Primarily, the plaintiffs were making an argument ex contractu, breach of contract here, for lost royalties due to too early syndication by the defendant Warner Brothers Group. Here, the defendants are essentially making an argument the plaintiffs were really profit participants and lack standing to sue under Section 4 of the Clayton Act. And while there are significant factual disputes in this case, for the sole purposes of ruling on the motion for summary judgment, the defendants here admitted that all facts alleged in the operative complaint are true. So as we say in the business, moving on. In 1971, a production financing distribution agreement, also known as a PFD agreement, was entered into between plaintiff Thomas Laughlin, the producer of the then contemplated film, Billy Jack, and defendant Warner Brothers. And under this PFD agreement, Warner Brothers was granted the exclusive rights to distribute the film both theatrically and on television, while Laughlin was entitled to receive, after certain deductions of course, 45% of the gross receipts of the film. Between 1971 and 1975, the film Billy Jack was distributed theatrically and was quite the financial success for both parties. As a matter of fact, it's still considered one of the early, if not the major blockbusters of the 1970s. Well, in late 1975, a dispute arose as to how to next distribute the film. Warner Brothers wanted to license it for television, while plaintiff Laughlin and team thought it still had profit potential theatrically. Importantly, and in terms of ruling on the motion for summary judgment in this case, plaintiffs maintained a percentage interest in the television gross. Well, in 1976, Warner Brothers licensed 15 pictures to NBC for $19 million, and one of the pictures was Billy Jack, for which NBC paid $1.5 million. Plaintiffs alleged, and it was admitted for purposes of this motion, that the licensing of these pictures constituted an illegal tying arrangement that's prohibited by the Sherman Act. The court, in analyzing what these various antitrust acts are meant to do, pointed out that not all of these acts, the Sherman Act, for example, and the Clayton Act, intend to mandate damage awards for all dislocations caused by unlawful mergers. Instead, the plaintiffs must prove that their injuries were caused by an injury of the type the antitrust laws were intended to prevent, and such injury that flows from that which makes the defendant's acts unlawful. And now, moving on from pure antitrust arguments into block booking, this court noted that block booking reduces competition for the more desirable films by eliminating competitors who will not or cannot buy the whole block. plaintiffs here, in this case at Bar, were injured directly by this lessening of competition. Block booking increases the value of less desirable films at the expense of the more desirable films, in this case, Billy Jack. Plaintiffs are therefore injured directly by this parasitic borrowing of value that's inherent in block booking. And as a result, plaintiff's injury arises as a direct result of, and frankly is caused by, the antitrust violation. Put in other words, if there was no antitrust violation, no restraint of trade in the tying of product, no loss of free competitive markets, plaintiff's injury would not have occurred. Plaintiffs are claiming an anti-injury, yes, and under various applicable tests, they have a right to be here because they have standing. Still, the Warner Brothers defendants claim that the plaintiffs were really in court because they didn't like the allocation they received out of the amount of money paid by Warner Brothers in syndication of Billy Jack to NBC that was part of the total block. This, the defendants attempted to argue, is not really an antitrust claim. But as this court pointed out, this argument misses the point. What plaintiffs are really arguing is that it was the illegal tying arrangement that caused them to receive less money. Of course, they're still going to have to establish this factually, but the plaintiff's allegation meets the target tests inherent in these antitrust violations, because these are exactly the type of losses that the antitrust statutes sought to prevent. Accordingly, this court found that the plaintiffs have standing, and the motion for summary judgment was accordingly denied. Importantly, there was a supplemental memorandum issued by this court just a month later, and they basically bolstered the treble damage recovery available under Section 4 of the Clayton Act. A truly interesting case. So what are some of the implications today? Well, for studio counsel, no block booking. Also, make sure that the production financing distribution or PFD agreements are fundamentally fair in terms of both substance and form to both parties. Additionally, make sure that royalty payments and syndication schedules are called out as clearly as can be and foretold as practically as possible. Obviously, for artists' counsel, make sure that you have retained a good lawyer, not just yours truly, to review all such PFD agreements. And as well, consider the utility of a consultation clause, where the artist maintains some good faith obligation to coordinate with the studios without divesting the studios of the ability to distribute aggressively, at least some consultation about what's going to happen, if such a clause is amenable to both parties. And finally, I might suggest, again, for artist counsel, to put in a clause for some advance payment credited against future syndication royalties. That tends to keep everybody happy and hopefully will prevent a case like this from occurring, if at all possible.